Here we go. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining me and my guest on Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know what we are, but not what we will be." And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, reforms into the butterfly, and then has to struggle in order to be able to fly, has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order to be able to fly. None of that has to be easy. But neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I am excited to have Olivia with me. I'm not going to try to pronounce her last name because I don't want to butcher it. We talked about it right before we went on, and I said it wrong, so I don't want to mess it up. But I met her at a teacher conference, and I am really excited for what she has to share, because a lot of the shows that I have are for the general population, the parents. But I'd like to occasionally have ones on that are specifically for the educators. And so today we're going to talk about some things for educators. And Olivia has a very exciting project that I think just released or is about to release. So she's going to talk about that as well. So Olivia, thanks for joining me. Welcome.
Shelley, it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you this beautiful Tuesday. And just to talk about passions and love for teaching and learning. And I think that's what this show is designed to, really just keep people learning and growing and becoming better people.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are joining live, let us know, hashtag live, and let us know where you're from. And if you have any comments or questions, please put them in the chat. And if you are watching in the replay, do the same thing, but say hashtag replay. And we're just going to keep on going. I always forget that businessy stuff because it's kind of boring, but I got to put that in there anyway. So tell us about what you do. And yeah, exactly. That's what this show is about, is learning and growing.
Well, I'm the owner and the CEO of Campus Insights, and we are a premier professional development training company focused on inquiry-based trainings, differentiation in any subject, focused on literacy across core topics, but really focused on teachers' beliefs. Because we know when teachers' beliefs are high and they have high expectations for students, we see student achievement changes, we see relationships, we see all of these good things. Because I don't care how good a curriculum is, I don't care how good, you know, you could have the best technology in the classroom. If that teacher doesn't believe in the students and their ability to grow, to go beyond the standardized test, we have some problems. So our tagline is that we are creating a culture of fearless educators. And we need fearless educators, especially after COVID, because this is an opportunity for us to try new things. We need drastically new approaches. We can't continue to do what we did in the past and expect new results in the future. So we're all about educational training that focuses on the heart of teachers to make them courageous in applying new approaches in the classroom.
And that is one of the things that drew me to your vendor booth that day, is because you were so pumped up and you were so excited. And when I came to talk to you, you just had such great things to say. And I remember, I don't teach full time anymore, but I do remember being in the classroom, and I'm a special education teacher. And so I did have to learn a lot of different ways to try to reach kids. And there was so much of it that I was scared to do because I was scared to fail. And not only was I going to be failing me, but I was going to be, what was worse was I was going to be failing my students. And so that fearless educator was really what drew me into that. So can we talk about why do you think we as teachers have that fear in the first place?
I mean, we got a lot of barriers. You know, it could be administration, because everything is focused on a standardized test, even though we know if we were to look at a circle of a school and all the things that happen in a school, there's probably a small little circle in that big circle that standardized test. So it's first this focus on a test versus focus on a whole child, focus on the social emotional learning of that child, focus on how does that child feel when they're in the classroom? What are the learning experiences taking place? So we have that fear first. I gotta pass this test. And the other fear is pacing God. I've cried in trainings because teachers are so focused on a pacing God and not focused on, are your students ready? Are they ready to progress versus, if I cover 60% of, I'm a math and a science teacher, if I cover 60% of my content and like we digging in it, I'm happy at the end of the year because I know that they have thinking ability versus I cover 90% of the content, I can pat myself on the back and I have nothing to show for it. So we have this administration, depending on what the energy is there towards testing that we're afraid of. Second, we got this other idea of I got to get through the content because, you know, it's so much I have to cover. And when we have those meetings, I'm being compared to other teachers and where they are versus where are the common assessments? Where are the common formative assessments we're looking at and we're making adjustments in our training in our teaching in order to reach kids? What are we talking about in terms of interventions? It's like MTSS is a myth in a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're scared of that process too, because many of us haven't been trained on in the MTSS process. We got a group of teachers hanging out at a school saying, this is the process, this is all the paper. That's fear, because no one's really taken me through the process. So, Sheila, you know, we can talk a little bit about all this. And then at the end of the day, I feel that I'm already overwhelmed. I got 30 kids in front of me. I got a lesson. I got to produce lesson plans. I got to submit them to my team. That's all of this is stressful. And so when you got all that stress on you already, what you want to do? Get your curriculum book out. A, B, C, D. 1, 2, 3. I'm going to follow what's there. I'm not trying nothing new. I don't have time to add extra stress to myself. But at the end of the day, you are stressing yourself because you're not happy. You don't like the way the learning is going on in the classroom. And you don't even feel like you're reaching your personal potential.
Right.
You know, it's like you over here struggling because it's like you want to do some stuff. You need an accountability partner. It's hard to find accountability partners. It's hard to find partners who want to go to conferences and learn more and invest in themselves. It's like, hey, Miss Odeleke, all that you're saying is real nice, but I'm tired.
Right.
I'm very tired.
That's such, oh my gosh, the burnout at summertime. Like, people don't understand who aren't in education. And I'll be honest, I have many family members who were this way. My mom was one of them specifically that, you know, she had that idea that, oh, teachers are off during the summertime. You know, they're done at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and they don't have to do stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I got into teaching and she went, oh my gosh, like I had no idea. And, you know, I was going to professional development over the summer. I was getting my classroom ready. I was reading IEPs because, again, I'm special education. So everybody that I have has an IEP. I was trying to figure out new curriculums because, you know, our school would change. I had K-8 for my students. And so, you know, maybe the kindergarten changed curriculum 1 year and then sixth grade changed their math curriculum the next year. And then the third year, somebody else changed curriculum. And so I was always trying to learn all of that stuff, as well as trying to figure out, well, how am I going to differentiate all this stuff? And so, yeah, my mom went, okay, yeah, no, teachers don't have the summers off. And, you know, so the stress level just with that, you know, we don't have the opportunity sometimes to really truly rest during the summer. You know, and which I'm actually a proponent of year round school, but that doesn't mean that we don't still have a summer break.
I taught at a year round school for 2 years and I really enjoyed it. Actually, we had about 4 weeks off in the summer, but we took 2 weeks, you know, it was great. It was great. Right. It all depends on what the focus is, you know?
Right. And I really think there's a lot of great science behind that year-round school system because you don't go any more days in the overall year. I mean, you're still going between 175 and 180, which is what it is here in the U.S., but it's those breaks. You get the break as the teacher to absorb new material yourself that you have to teach, to take some of the stress away, catch your breath. And then the students' brains have the opportunity when those 2-week break happens that their brains can absorb it, process it, and then they can be ready to learn new information. So little soapbox there. Sorry.
Okay. Hey, we need to do that every now and then. That makes us human. That makes us real.
This is true. This is true. So I do want to just really quickly, 2 things. I want to say hi to Fran. She said hi. She was joining us from Southern Illinois. Okay. And then the other thing, if you would explain, because I always try to, as a special ed teacher, spell out the acronyms. So you said MTSS. That was the only one that I caught. Can you explain what that means?
Multiple tier support system. So basically, you have a student, your tier one is your whole group instruction, and they say about maybe 80% to 75% of your kids will get it in that tier one. And then tier two, sometimes that's when we do the little small groups in our classroom. And then tier three is more like one-on-one, focus on specific skills. And as IEP teachers, this is kind of where you come in and the other supports in the school comes into place. And so at the end of the day, though, you're supposed to be monitoring certain students on this MTSS level to determine if they need that tier three or if they need special services. And that's really what it's designed for. But mm-hmm. The other thing it's designed for is to see, can we intervene with some very specific strategies so that this student doesn't need to go to special needs?
Right.
So can we identify the problem in the beginning? But a lot of teachers, again, this is not something they really teach in the education courses.
Right. Right.
So you come to school and then who has time to coach and mentor? You know, I'm a real big proponent for on the job training where right. you have somebody with you showing you certain things. And so at the end of the day, it's about some fundamentals. As a teacher, I gotta master some fundamental things. First thing I need to master is I just need to master the standards. No matter what curriculum I have, the standards are there. And right. so if I analyze those standards and I pull concepts, not all the vocabulary, all the background, what is like a picture? What is something concrete I can put in my brain that these children can relate to? Mm-hmm. I think if we started off there, then I think all those little details would come. And that's another reason I'm going to piggyback to the book, Spark Curiosity, A Guide to Quick Inquiry Tasks, is because I do a lot of trainings. I've trained over 10,000 teachers, and we will look at standards and I say, what is the concept? And we'll be in there for a few minutes, really trying to focus on what the concept is. We know what they're supposed to be doing. Here are some examples. Here's the vocabulary. But what is the concept? So focusing on standards and making a list of concepts, that's the first thing. Because once you get those concepts, it's going to be so easy for you to come up with activities and strategies that relate to something concrete, something that allows students to connect with. The second thing is you got to have some tech tools. If you're in middle or high school and you got 100 plus kids on your roster, you cannot differentiate. You cannot do any type of intervention if you're not collecting data on an ongoing basis. And the only way I know to collect data and get the feedback immediately is using some type of technology. Because this old school stuff, going home, spending 48 hours trying to grade everything, that's why people burnt out. Shelly, that is why the first year of my teaching, Shelly, I said, I ain't going to make it. I said, I wasn't going to make it. I said, this system here, Olivia is not going to make it. So Olivia right. starts saying, how can I make this more efficient? How can I come to school every day happy mm-hmm. and smiling? Because I really believe happy teacher, happy classroom. Right. Stressed out teacher, stressed out classroom. Right? You know, you see it everywhere. You know,
yeah.
antidepressant teacher, antidepressant classroom. Okay.
Yep. Very so true.
Your mental health and how you feel. And then sometimes they give you a lot of stuff. They're giving you all these things to do. You have to say in your brain, what can I do today? Don't say I'm going to do it, because then that's stressing you too. So I used to have the three thing rule. Every day I do 3 things and then I feel good about myself. Do those 3 things.
Awesome.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. I did a lot. Pat, because nobody patting you on the back as a teacher.
This is true.
Nobody celebrating teachers. Nobody coming down the street with some pom-poms. Hey, go girl, you did it today. You made it through
week.
Like, I just feel like at the end of the week on a Friday, when those kids leave, that need to be like a 10-minute dance party in the hallways.
Oh,
we need to be
idea.
Celebrating, like bringing our energy. We did this, high-fiving, because we keep talking about celebrating the students. Who's celebrating the teachers? Amen. We got to celebrate the teachers because I got to come to this place knowing I feel good when I'm in this place. I feel supported when I'm in this place. And Shelly, I can be like you. I can go so many different places. So you gotta
be like, hey, Olivia, come over here, Olivia. Hey, listen, hey, come back over here.
But I was talking about these fundamentals. So I gotta have a technology tool. I gotta know the concepts I'm teaching. Right. I might not know the new curriculum, but the curriculum is a supplement. It is not primary. The teacher is what brings a curriculum to life. And I think more teachers need to feel confident that they have the abilities to reach the kids, because when they designed that curriculum, because I used to work for a huge curriculum company, they use the same curriculum 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
They use the same curriculum 50 states. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me all the kids in America, they the same?
Right.
No. You take a little bit from it, and what do? You add the interests of the kids in the classroom, and you think about those concepts, and then your life is going to be easier. And then the third part, once you got the technology, then you got to have some really strong effective practices. And I think every teacher needs at least 5 or 6 wax on toolbox practices that help engage their students. And we know discussion is real big. We know offering mini lessons is real big, because I don't really differentiate like in small groups. I offer mini lessons using the tech tool Nearpod. So I make mini lessons, and then I ask the kids, I give the kids a check for understanding. Once they take the check, I say, baby, how you feel? You feel like you need a review? You feel like you want to practice more? You feel like you want a challenge? And then they tell me what they want. And then they take a little mini lesson, about 10 or 15 minutes, self-paced, so that they can get something on their level at their, pace. And then we come and talk about it afterwards. But we're about having fun. I think we need more classrooms having fun. And I think if we can get some strategies that are fun, that the kids are into, versus just looking in this book and following the steps in the curriculum, that's what's killing us, though. I'm serious.
Yeah.
That is what's killing the classroom. And then have some dance breaks. Kids love music. Have a 2-minute dance break. You went through something very rigorous. They just worked for you. What are you going to give them? What are you going to give them? You got to give them something. It's just like, the little doggy does some tricks for you. Well, you give the little doggy a little treat, right? And then the doggy do some more tricks for you. This same thing is for kids. I'm sorry, no matter what their age is, even when they're grown, I do virtual trainers, and we'll be in there, and I'll be like, high five to Jason, for being the first one to respond. And then someone else responds, and they be like, where my high five?
Uh-huh.
I didn't get my high five. Oh, I'm sorry, Shelly. High five to her, Shelly. Let's throw it up in the...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, it's funny that we can talk about these things, and I bet there'll be teachers watching this that will say, yeah, I know that. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I do that. But I bet if we went and observed in their classroom, they would be surprised at how little they do what they think they're doing. And I have found this to be true when I do in-person trainings. And I'll do what you just said, but I'll be intentional about not giving positive feedback to certain people, or I'll intentionally talk to someone ahead of time and say, hey, I'm going to give you some really poor feedback. And it's for like an experience. And, because I don't know these people, I don't know who's going to be able to take a little bit of guff and be okay with it. And so I will talk to them about that. And then I'll either, specifically give praise to some and then not give anything to others. And then I'll at the end start talking about, did you all notice the difference that, this group of people I gave praise to, and they continued to answer questions and interact with me
and persevere
and do all the things. But this group over here, like, they kind of gave up because I wasn't giving them praise. Or when I do that with a person and I'm, really hard on them, I'll say, did you notice how like everybody stopped volunteering? Nobody came to that
energy change. Your energy, like, wherever attention goes, energy flows.
Yep. And so, it's really interesting that until we experience ourselves a few times, and even as a refresher, because I'm I'm sure I was that way when I taught full-time, because we're human. We get into ruts and we start doing things a certain way. And unfortunately, until somebody points it out to us, we don't necessarily catch it for ourselves.
No, we don't. You know, and sometimes we're in the classroom and your students are rigorously working on something. And then you just got to feel the energy. You got to say, you know what? We need a pause. DJ, hit it. You know, you have a little already, but then hit it and you're like, we got to break this thing down, you guys. Let's go, you know, and then it just changed the energy. Your brain is now like, okay, let's get back in it.
Yes.
And, you know, hey, let's go around, run around the room. Let's high five each other real fast. I'm real big on, like, you know, we do little hand gestures because it changes the energy. So if you're going in a classroom and you're feeling like, I hate my job, I can't do this, you know, principals against me, this district, all of that is in your energy versus you go to your class and just change your mindset. Because, you know, one thing I used to tell a teacher, listen, how many people come into your classroom? How many people come into your classroom? You have so much control and you don't even know you have it. Yes, about 10% of the time someone might come and observe you or whatever, but you have control over these babies in your classroom. And if you build relationships, you see them as people, you check in with them, you check in with their parents every now and then, not just to check in on something negative, always something positive. My first phone call with a parent is always positive. So the parent got a positive energy towards you. They might not know none of the but they know Miss Oda like it, because Miss Oda like it gonna make sure they get a personal phone call, because I know their energy is gonna affect the energy of that student when they come into my classroom. And then we're gonna talk about how we're gonna celebrate. The first 3 days is just welcome to my class. We ain't even talking about no academics. We're not even talking about all the rules, because nobody wanna hear that. No one wants to hear all the rules. We wanna know who you are first. Like, Shelly, who are you? What do you like to eat? What do you like to do in the summer? What's your favorite app? What kind of games you playing? What's your favorite movie? What's the last movie made you cry? You know, and you go around and you start talking student to student, you know, because first of all, these students got to interact with each other. That's why so much bullying in schools, because they're not talking to each other and learning about each other and their backgrounds in a safe and emotional support way. And then they have a teacher who's authentic, because I think also being fearless, Shelly, is being yourself. It's not you come to school and you become somebody else. No, you go into your swag. You go into your personality, because they're going to respect you more because they know you real. They need real people around them. They don't need people who kissing butt. They don't need people who are just saying things because it looks like nice to say, baby, you're not looking nice today. I need you to do this. I need them pants to be pulled up, because baby, you go in places, and in places I want you to go, you got to have your pants. You know, we got to talk to them like that, where we're speaking potential in them, and we have to see the diamond in them too. I think that's real hard, especially when you have kids who are really rough and maybe they use profanity. Maybe they have a bad track record and they come to you and you have this pre-information about them versus looking at them as a new person, fresh slate. Every day we come to class, it's new energy. We can change, we can make adjustments, because it's just your behavior. We can change your behavior. That's not who you are, though. I know you better than this. And and being positive and smiling, and this is my last little tip. Don't let them know you angry. Don't let them know they push your buttons. And one of the things, the kids, they never knew when I was angry. I just be smiling. Oh, baby, that's what you want to do, baby? You sure you want to do that? Okay. You know, and I'll be writing a list. I'm like, and then I'd be like, Jason, I need you to stay at the class today. Or, Jason, we're going to call mama at lunch. While you at lunch, you're going to come on over here to the, we're going to call mama right now. See, we got to get that thing nipped in the bud, because when we yell at a whole class, first of all, the good kids in the class feel bad.
Right.
They feel like, what did I do? Why is she yelling at me? And we got so many teachers yelling at kids. They already used to that in their environment. We trying to show them learning is fun. Learning is engaging. Why are you yelling at them? Don't do it. You got to control your emotions. Because the minute they know they have control of you, is the minute you're a little pebble in their hand. And it's like you working at the prison. They got you.
Right.
The prisoners there, you know, they got you. They looking to manipulate you, you know. And at the end of the day, though, you feel better, because you know what? You were the adult. They were the child. They threw a chair up. Maybe that's what you want to do. You know, it's just like you just change the energy, but you are going down. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. and then the kids watching and they're like, that's my teacher. That's who I'm supposed to respect. That lady right there or that man right there screaming exactly. and saying you're going down. I just press a little call button. We have a little disturbance going on in room 147. I need somebody removed from my classroom. Yeah. Or I say, look, kids, we need to go outside. We let this person tear up the room. That's their business. I don't know, you know, but that's fearless because right. I'm not afraid of no kid. You got teachers who are afraid of kids, too, and they feel that energy, too. Like a dog, you walking on the street. A dog knows when you're afraid of it. But when you ain't afraid of it and you just walk and handle your bit, that dog might bark one time and then it stops. It's like, oh, that person ain't afraid of me.
Right.
It's like, we need a whole class on that. I can do a whole class on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's one of the things that I remember a professor teaching me, and I tried to do this as much as possible.
Yeah.
And it was called KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. That's exactly what it stood for. And it was, you know, what you're talking about. Like, I had such a privilege as a special education teacher because I didn't have to do that. And I forget how you worded it, but get through the curriculum and get through so much of it at a certain time.
Yes.
I could slow down. I could. And I call that a privilege because I do think that so many of our gen ed teachers do have that pressure of, you know, and they are getting that from their administration. You have to get through, you know, like you said, 90% of the curriculum
yeah.
by the time we uh-huh. do standardized testing, because yeah. the score on that standardized test has to show how great we are, because not only are you as a teacher being evaluated by that score, but mm-hmm. we as a school are being evaluated by those scores. And if we want to keep our accreditation, and if we want to keep our funding, and if we want to keep our blue ribbon status, and if
yada,
we
yada, yada, blah, yada, blah, 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 blah. Yes.
It's all on that teeny tiny little circle that you mentioned in the really big circle. And so
I've always been a no limit. What was the show called again? I need to look back at that thing.
No hashtag limit. No limits.
Yeah, I'm a no limit soldier teacher. No limit soldier. So when I went to college, I saw this speaker and he said, you know, in life, you're going to come across a lot of things and you're going to have to figure out what's the truth and what's not the truth. And one simple thing, I just still remember this analogy, and he used the analogy of you go to college, you go to the history class, and they say Christopher Columbus discovered America. He said you got to have two notebooks. He said, I have one notebook, and you put Christopher Columbus discovered America. You write that down. Then you have another notebook on the other side. Say that's a lie. He like you gotta be able to, you know, put yourself in both worlds. So they tell me as a teacher, I gotta get through. Here are all the standards, like 50 something standards for Algebra 1. And I said, okay, I'm gonna cover the curriculum, Shelly. Don't worry. I wrote that in one notebook, and then the other notebook, I said, that's a lie. I'm gonna make sure the kids get the content, but above all, get thinking ability. Think yes. about things, because really these tests are thinking tests. They're not recall tests. They're not remember this test. They're, can you put this in a different scenario right. versus can you say, oh, you got all those questions, right? There's 50 different algebra questions you just did. And I give you a scenario and you have no idea how to create an equation from the scenario. So what have I really taught you?
Exactly.
So you got to have these two notebooks. You got to know this is what they asking you to do, but your common sense has to come in someplace and say, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to make an impact on kids, and we're going to learn, and learning is going to be fun and engaging. And my children can take any test in this life and they're going to do well on it. Cause what I am teaching my children how to think. And that is really the key to learning is thinking. But how do we get them to think? We got to make them curious.
Right.
And to me, sparking curiosity, piquing curiosity is the holy grail of teaching. And we're not spending enough time on that. How are we making young people want to learn? Not mm-hmm. say you have to learn this, but how do I get them to want to learn this? And good teachers do those kind of things. They do those kind of things. So
yes.
I'm very passionate about what I do. That's why I'm doing this. That's why, you know, I got a nice consulting team. We have about 10 other consultants on the team, and I'm hoping to grow this year, maybe even to 20 consultants, because We just have a different model and we have a different energy. And it's really about making professional development fun. Because mm-hmm. I always ask you, when the last time you went to a PD and you was laughing? And after you left the PD, you wanted to apply what you learned. Like you felt empowered enough to say, you know what? I'm going to try this. I'm going to go in my class this week. I just got an artifact. I just developed a product. I'm going to go try it out and then have some support, have a accountability partner so you can collaborate with and say, how did you do on that? Because I think really the key to trying new things is collaboration. And then if you okay feeling the feel, you're going to bring that energy in your class where your kids was like, my favorite quote in math was mistakes make me better. And I remember one time I was teaching something and I made a mistake. And the kids were like, Miss Alden, like, hey, that's not right. It's supposed to be this. And sometimes I did mistakes on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh my goodness. I made that mistake. It's all right, Miss Alden, like, hey, mistakes make you better. I say, yes, darn, mistakes make me better. You know? So we need like little quotes like this around us too, to be like, and then when you try something and they know you're trying something new, you say, hey, listen, I just went to this conference. I did this course online. I decided I want to try this new strategy with you guys today. I might fail real bad, but listen, mistakes make us better. We learn from our failures. Failure is the tuition to success. You know, I got tons of those all day long. And then my kids, they just hand it out. You know, people want to give up. What happens when you want to give up? Fear over courage. You know, we got these little sayings to help us because we need sayings. We need affirmation. I'm real big on affirmation.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, you know, you be in a hard place and you're like, this too shall pass. That's one of my favorite ones in school. Like, this school year shall pass. You know, this little boy that's driving me crazy, this too shall pass. It's going to pass real soon. Don't worry. It's coming.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I did a long-term sub position and it was for seventh and eighth grade gen ed students, which, as I said, my background was in special ed. And as you were talking about earlier, never let them see you get angry. It wasn't intentional, but it was just because of my personality and all my years of teaching, because this was after I had left the classroom full time. And apparently I would say when someone would do something, instead of, oh, that's what you're going to do, which you said, I would say, is that necessary? Was that really necessary? And I didn't realize that I did it until one day some kid acted up a little bit and one of the other students said, was that really necessary? And I was like, oh, yes, I've been saying that a lot. But it does exactly what you said. It makes them think. It makes them take responsibility for their actions. It just, you know, it does. It changes the attitude because absolutely, I could have been yelling at that student. You know, I could have been doing a whole lot different than what I did. And so much of what you're saying, I know that teachers have heard before.
Yeah.
So how do we get what you're saying? How do we get them to spark curiosity in their classrooms on a regular basis and defeat those reasons that we talked about at the beginning that cause that fear?
Well, first of all, we need to know as a teacher, what is our purpose? Like, I personally believe part of my purpose as a teacher is to help children and students develop discipline, because we know anything in life you want, you got to be a disciplined person in order to have success. You got to sacrifice something in order to get there. So one of our primary purposes is not just to get them to think, but to discipline them so that they can start taking responsibility of their own learning. Now, when you start disciplining children and teaching them discipline, at first, they're going to resist a little bit, but they're going to see the love. Because there's a Bible scripture, I read my Bible, because if I didn't read my Bible, I definitely couldn't have been no fearless teacher.
Right? I'm 100% with you on that.
But it says that a person who loves you disciplines you. Mm-hmm. So if you love somebody, you actually going to discipline them to show that you love them. And I want to go back to some of my teachers. I remember my chemistry teacher the most. She taught me the most about discipline because she had a quote on the board that I still remember to this day. And she was like, no joke, like, you're going to do my work. It's going to be rigorous. It's going to be hard. And you're going to do my homework, too. You're not going to come up with excuses. And so she had this quote on the wall. And it basically said this. And every day before class, it's like an affirmation. Like, One of the things we can do is have affirmations for our kids every day, because we got to discipline them. That's a part of discipline. And she was disciplining us. And the quote was, excuses are monuments of nothingness. They build bridges to nowhere. And those of us who use these tools of incompetence are masters of nothingness. Wow. And at the end of the day, I kept saying, I don't want to be a master of nothing. I got to do this. You know, it was like she was putting something in us that we didn't know we had in ourselves. So that is like one of the first things is when you have your kids in front of you, are you just trying to get them to make a grade? Or are you looking at them as little kids who are fat, they're out of shape, and you got to whip them into shape? Like, that's one of your jobs is to, hey, wax on, wax off. We're going to be here like the Karate Kid. We're going to be like, here, Miss, I like it. It's hurt. I said, I know, baby, but just keep doing it, baby. Just keep doing it. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. The work is coming, you know? And that's what we have to be, too. We have to be thinking about those things. The second thing is we have to network with positive, like-minded teachers. If you go into the break room and the break room is all about what's wrong and wah, 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 that's going to affect your energy. You got to connect with people. And if you're not able to connect with someone in your school, connect with someone on Twitter. Find a local conference that's near you. Because what I found is that within my very first year of teaching, I was going to conferences. I was seeing other teachers be fearless and trying new things. I was like, oh, they tried that. I'm going to go and I'm going to try it. Because they already had some success. So when you see somebody having success, then you can also do it. And then also look at your classroom as action research. I believe 50% of training should be research-based practices. But the other 50% of your classroom should be action research. Why? Because the kids you're teaching are not the kids they tested on the research.
They're
different. They mindset is different. They went through COVID. We ain't got no research on these COVID kids that much.
Exactly.
Okay. We got new generation kids coming in. So you are actually like a little scientist. And that's another reason why teachers have to try new things, because you got new people in front of you. You can't keep doing all of those. So 50%, we got some hardcore instructional practices, but other 50%, I'm trying some stuff. I heard a teacher do this. I heard a teacher in the network try it. I'm going to come in and I'm going to try it too and see the results I get. And then a lot of times you're going to see some good results. Why? Because you had the courage to try something different and to step out your comfort zone.
And what a great example that is to the students who we are constantly telling, you have to try new things, which we don't say those words, but every time we try to teach them something new, we're asking them to try something new. We're asking them to attempt to fail. But yet we often don't model that for them. And so I've been on a soapbox for years about stop asking kids to do things that you yourself won't do.
We are best student. I always tell my teachers that I'm training. I said, whatever you do during this training, whether you pay attention, whether you go on your phone and you go shopping, you go order stuff off Amazon, you go to the bathroom, you keep talking. I said, you're your best student. Whatever you do, your best student. That's exactly what they're going to model. Mm-hmm. And they don't like hearing that. They don't like hearing that. But also a lot of the reasons we're where we are, Shelley, tell you the truth now. It's because we've been trained that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the training that we've been receiving that has a lot.
Uh-oh, I just lost the volume. Oh, time out. I can't hear you.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Okay, all right. The training that we've received, because the thing about it is we went to school for teaching.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't really trained on high student engagement. We were lectured to. We were, you know, and then we have PDs that feel like it's forced on us. We don't have a lot of choice in it. And the same thing in the classroom. When students don't have a choice, they don't feel like they have a voice. And when they don't feel like they have a voice, they do the bare minimum. So our professional development has to be more of the model of what we want in the classroom, because we haven't really been trained. And that's really what it is. And at the end of the day, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm comfortable with. I don't know how to do that other stuff. And then when I do get trained, it's too much. It's too much research. It's too much. These people have not taken the time to know your kids and how your school and your culture is, because that affects your teaching methods too. That affects how you reach the kids, knowing their backgrounds, knowing what they're dealing with in their communities, in their neighborhoods. So that's why I say it's the action research is 50%, because you got to go observe, you got to go write your notes, and you got to figure out ways to connect that curriculum to their life, to their situation. So going back to that PD, and that's another reason why I started this business of professional development, is because I love to learn. I love to learn. I was like reading a book like once a week. I was always trying to, man, there's so many books I got over here and so many trainings I do while I'm training. I'm going to a training because I love learning and pushing myself and like looking ways to innovate, you know. So a teacher got to have a desire too, to be like, well, if I'm not getting the professional development that I need to go find it. I need to go look for it in different avenues. And then so many people doing so many amazing things. And we have the internet, you know, 20 years ago, we had the internet like this.
Right.
You know, it's like, dude, what's your excuse? Hey, kids cussing you out in class. Okay. Google how to stop kids cussing me. Mm-hmm. You Google exactly. And then somebody give you some tips on how to deal with that. And then you go back in, apply, and you say, hey, thank you, Olivia. That worked for me. I appreciate you.
Right.
So I'm just hoping that we can change this PD thing, because if you want different results, you got to do things differently. People should be partying at PDs. They should be celebrating. There should be high energy. There should be high expectations. There should be people like, well, we can't make them do that because it's not in the contract. We can't, you know, all of that is limitations too, right? I'm like, what are you talking about as a contract? Why don't we focus on doing what's best for kids? Why we got to be doing all of this other foolishness that don't make no kind of sense to me? That's why I could never be no union person either. Praise you, union people. I know we got to have our rights and we got to do all this stuff. But are we really thinking about kids at the end of the day and what is best for kids too? So
Yeah,
I just try to think about what's best for them. I try to think about how do I learn? And if the PD is not where it needs to be, hey, can we bring this person in? Can we bring Campus Insights in to show us a different way so that we can start reimagining how learning can possibly look? Because everything is about a feeling. Learning is a feeling. It's a feeling. When you're in a classroom, you feel a certain way. You feel connected to your teacher. You feel connected to your students. You're going to learn. You're going to grow. You're going to achieve. Same thing. If you go to a PD with a bunch of teachers and if that facilitator in the first 15, 20 minutes has you making connections with the group, you're connected to that person, you feel that person's real authentic and really has your best interest, you're going to feel a whole different experience and you're going to learn some. Why? Because your inhibitions is down. You feel safe and you feel ready to explore. And that's really what we got to do. We got to make people feel safe. We got to make people feel like, I care about you. I want you to be here. I see something in you that other people don't see in you. And when you start feeling that, and you got to feel it for them, because they don't know how to feel it at first. You got to have so much inside of you that you're giving it to them. Then you start seeing some transformations and people start growing. And they like, is it that strategy? Is that research-based strategy? Yeah, it's that research. It's called relationships. It's called rigor. Yes. It's called relevance. It's called my three R's: relationships, rigor, and relevance. If you do those three things, children will learn. They'll be there. That's
yeah. And you know, I didn't get opportunity like this to talk to you at the conference because we both had tables and we both had people coming up to them. But as you and I are talking today, I'm sure I've been doing this the whole, because so much of what you are saying, me nodding my head, is I say very similar, if not the identical words. When I'm doing presentations, when I'm talking to teachers, when I go, I'm an education consultant, when I go into these meetings and I talk to families and the teachers and the staff at the schools, you know, it's huge. Like I always say, I do a behavior training and I always will have a slide up there. I'm like, what is the key to behaviors? And then I pull it away and it's me and a child smiling and it's like, it's that relationship. Mm-hmm. And you talked about that at the beginning, like you know, at the beginning of your school year, you don't talk about rules. You don't talk about curriculum. You talk, mm-hmm. you get to know them. The kids. And, you know, when I say that, I get a lot of teachers give me immediate pushback. I don't have time to make a relationship. I've got all this curriculum to get through.
Yeah. Pray on that. How that's working for you. You figured that one out yet? You figured that one out yet? Huh? Is it working for you? Good. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good. But that's just like a principal having teachers, and they never have one-on-ones with their teacher and staff except to go in and evaluate them.
Right.
So you're modeling the same thing to your teachers versus administration has the model also. Right. You matter to me, you know, like I know that Olivia has this family. She lives very close to the school. She takes care of grandma on the weekends. You know, I got an idea of who she is. So when certain things happen or don't happen, I can have a little empathy too, because I understand the situation. Or I at least have a little survey, or at least, you know, the first couple of weeks of school, I have 10 minutes, at least 10 minutes set up to talk to each of my teachers, not just interview them, but talk to them. What's going on in their life? You know, I think that's very important. And especially if you're a new administrator coming to a new school, don't come in there and change everything like your first year and try to be superwoman or superman. Don't do it. Leave it alone. Come in your first year and say, let me observe. I'm going to make a couple directives, because you're the principal, but spend that year observing, finding out who your strong teachers are. Who are the teachers who are the leaders, the underground leaders, not the ones who want to kiss your booty leaders, but the underground leaders, and how when they do something, everybody else do something. So once you got those people, then when you come up with ideas that you think will be good for the school, you go bring those underground leaders in and you say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this or making this change. What do you think about it? How do you think it's going to be received? Because you're brand new. You don't know. Right. And I think a lot of administrators and leaders set themselves up for failure because they forget that they're a servant. You're there to serve. You're not there to lead. You're really there to serve. And you're supposed to be the greatest example of humility and servitude. And then when they see that kind of spirit, and then they see you care and you're taking the time to get to know them, that energy is going to also reciprocate in the classroom too.
Yeah.
It's going to reciprocate. But it's hard because we hard-headed. We some very hard-headed people. It's like we know what it takes to build relationships. We know how to motivate people. There's tons of books, Good to Great. There's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. We got all these good books out here. But it's just like being a hearer of the word and not a doer of the word. You can hear it all day long. But until you do it and put it into practice, that's when you're going to see the results of your labor.
Yep. Absolutely. And I agree with what Fran said. I popped it up earlier, but I'm going to pop it in again. You know, we needed your kind of teaching. We needed your kind of administrators in the buildings that we were going.
But we scared though, Shelly. That's what it is. We're so afraid of losing our job. We're afraid of status. I'm just so tired of being afraid. I'm like, dude, live, do what is right. And when you do what is right, you feel good. People around you feel good. They are attracted to you because this person, you know, they got a justice about them. They got a love about them, because I love people, Shelly, really. At the end of the day, I love people and I love learning. And I said, I get to bring both of those two worlds together and help shed some light, because we have not been trained how to do that. Because many of us, we've gone through school, we've taken courses that they made us take. They said, you got to take this course to get this degree, right? So when I graduated from my university, I said to myself, it's time to start going to the Olivia University. It's time for me to put in the knowledge and the books and the people that are going to make me a better person. So we got to get from this, okay, they've been telling you what to do. Now you got to really start getting into the love of what you want to do and developing your own curriculum for your own self-worth and your own growth. And when you do that, you won't be afraid of nobody no more, because you'll know your worth. And we don't know our worth because other people have dictated to us our worth by telling us what we got to do something. And when at some point do we decide what we want to do? And how do we want to do it? We got to educate ourselves in order to do that. So that love and learning, they got to go together. They got to go together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I don't want to get out of here without you talking about your website and the book and how people can find you. Do you want me to pull up the website?
You can definitely pull it up so they can take a look at some of our services and some of our team members, and all of our workshops that we currently offer are there. We have about 30 different courses that we currently offer. One is also just about teacher efficacy and how do we build collective teacher efficacy. Because one of the things that happens is people come in, right, and they evaluate us, right? And then they write our name down and say, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, right? Well, we come in and we do learning walks. In our learning walks, we don't look at names. We just look at a grade level and we look at a subject. And then we look at certain things. And then we highlight what is being done positively in the classroom. And then the professional development is why we're there. So we ain't got to talk about what you need to work on because that's why we're there. So you focus on what's going on good, and then you don't put names on it. You focus on strategies, and then what happens is collectively people start wanting to work together versus feeling like you pointing the finger at me again. Nobody wants the finger pointed at them, and we got to stop that too. And that also creates fear because I feel like I'm going to be singled out as a person that's not doing the right thing, right? And then we go through that whole shenanigans. So we need to really change how we do some of our informal evaluations to focus on groups and collectively, what are we doing collectively? Because we know that Daniel Hattie, he said that, you know, collective teacher efficacy was like the biggest impact on student achievement when everybody believes that we're responsible for the learning. So, and these are our workshops. These are our current professional development offerings that we offer. We like to come in first up to 3 hours because we want to build a relationship. We want to create this spirit of achievement. And then from there, school districts could decide to do a self-paced. It's almost the same content, but we add some more research articles. And then we add an artifact where they have to develop or make a video or do something with the knowledge and get some expert feedback on it.
Oh, that's awesome. Because, so often I think part of the fear of going, taking that information from a conference and then going back is you don't have anybody to support you. So you really don't know, you know, well, if I want to tweak it for my specific classroom, well, what would be a good way to do that? You have to try to figure that out on your own. And I know a lot of people, and I was guilty of this a few times myself. I'm like, yeah, well, that sounded really great, but how am I going to make that work in my setting, in my classroom?
Miss Shelley, say that one again. Say it one more time, baby. Say it one more time. How am I going to do this? That is the biggest question teachers have after a PD. That was really nice. That session on differentiate, I don't see myself doing none of that.
Right.
And I do, and we have a powerful differentiation. I talked about the mini lessons, but we do the mini lessons only twice a week. And from middle and high school, I showed them how to do it twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday. You know, you taught them some content Monday, Tuesday comes, they take a little check. Then after they do the little check, we do a little mini lesson. We break it down into, and then students, first of all, feel funny. Because first of all, this is their first time in life where a teacher is offering them a choice.
Right.
Everybody's not doing the same thing. We're doing, and then they know Tuesday, Thursday, that's DI day. That's the day we're going to differentiate, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what we did. And I also like that time to be work with a partner time. Somebody else that's on your level. So we're building partnerships, you know, so the energy just changes. So with that differentiation one, and using Nearpod, because on my website too, I wrote a book. It's called Beginner's Guide to Nearpod, a tool for transforming learning. And the other book, Spark Curiosity, I wish I could show that because I literally am waiting on the proof to come in for that one. It's on my other screen, but I don't know if I can share screens here. But
you can,
Oh, I can? Okay.
Yep.
Present.
Down at the bottom.
Okay,
yeah,
I see present.
I'll stop
Let me just show that for a second.
Yep.
Let me
It'll
share
pop
my
up
other
on
screen.
Me first.
Okay.
And then
okay.
I'll put it up into the stream.
Okay.
And for anyone who is just listening to this, I do want to go over the website address. It's campus. campus-insights-inc.ueniweb.com.
Yeah. And then hopefully in about a week, it'll totally be campusinsights.com. I literally just had my website redone. And so this is the one until the domain name is able to officially transfer over. So here's Spark Curiosity, a guide to quick inquiry tasks. I wanted to do something that's just different. You know, when you look at that, that doesn't look like an education picture, right?
Nope,
it's a little different.
Not.
It's like, and then I wanted to pick a young boy because they actually say that in America, Black boys are the most gifted children in America, but they are the most misidentified as gifted.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. because of, you know, because they have this energy that's just too much for a lot of Caucasian teachers. I'm sorry, just to put it out there, because it's like they look at it as like a culture thing versus kind of looking at their talent. So that's why I chose this young boy, because I feel like we're missing a lot of our young Black males or our young Latino males, because we don't understand their culture and their backgrounds. But if we can spark them, if we can get them interested in topics before we start teaching them anything, it'll be amazing. So, like, for example, I was with some social studies teachers just a couple weeks ago doing a training. And it was like eighth grade, seventh grade. And we're looking at the American Revolution. We're looking at the standard of what the students need to learn within this topic. So I sit with them and I say, well, what is the main concept? What is the main concept you want the students to get from this? And we kind of went back and forth. And it's like, okay, well, maybe somebody, you know, someone who was an underdog struggling, and then a person who was supposed to win wins. Okay, let's turn it into an inquiry task now. We're going to say, think of a time when an underdog became the winner. So work in your groups. You got at least three students in a group. Everybody's coming up with these different ideas. Why? Because they had different experiences. They might relate a video game. They might relate a movie. They might relate something. Well, I'm with teachers. This is what teachers say. Oh, Super Bowl. The Eagles, they were supposed to win, but, you know, other teams, St. Louis came in and just took them over, right? And then a coach, she coaches basketball. She talks about, well, my girls, they were new to teaching playing basketball in middle school, and we went all the way to state and won. And and then once we talked about that, then we talked about, well, how do you think the underdogs were feeling? What were some of the emotions they were going through? Man, they probably was feeling scared. They probably was feeling like, are we going to be able to do this? But somebody must have got them believing in themselves, right? Someone made them believe in themselves. And so then kids start relating to that. You know, oh, I was watching this movie and I was believing this and this. These children now are feeling connected to the American Revolution. They don't even know we about to connect them to the American Revolution, because I haven't talked about American Revolution yet.
Right.
But now we understand the concept and the energy and the feelings and the emotions. And then, okay, we make the little summary. So an underdog often needs to believe in themselves more so than the people who think they should win. So we get a little summary statement. Everybody write the summary statement down. That's our concept that we have. Okay, we're going to talk about the American Revolution today, and we're going to focus on this learning objective. How did the Americans win? Now we're making a connection. Now people energy. Oh, you know, they're a little more interested in it. They might even want to go home and find out about it, because they're like, how you did that, Olivia? I said, well, you can do it every day. You just got to rethink how you learn. You got to rethink what is going to make it relevant, and how can we connect concrete concepts to what students are learning so they remember and retain. So that's really what Spark Curiosity is about. It's about getting little simple little tasks, getting them to talk about it, coming up with a little summary that gets them motivated to want to learn more.
That's awesome. That sounds absolutely amazing. And I can't wait for all the teachers. I wish every teacher could get it.
I'm hoping so too. It's part of our training. We got a training on social studies, math, ELA with the learning experience. And every teacher who takes that course will also get a copy of Spark Curiosity that officially be out on the 31st of this month. Perfect. And they can go to Amazon, they can get it. It'll be a Kindle, and it'll probably be about 2 or 3 weeks before it's available on Audible, but it will also be available on Audible.
I have to get mine out on Audible. My book has been out now for 2.5 years, and I still don't have it in Audible version. And I still have people telling me, I don't have time to read, but I'll listen.
Exactly. I'm one of those people now. I mean, I travel a lot now. Audible, I got like 3 books on Audible, and I'm always, when I'm on the plane, that's when I'm listening to it. So, girl, get it on Audible.
I know. I got to get it done. Well, Olivia, this has just been such a pleasure. And I mean, your energy throughout the entire show has been fantastic. And so if you have been listening or you have watched this, be sure, if you have enjoyed Olivia's energy, that you reach out to her and you reach out to your administration, or if you are the administrator, that you reach out yourself and say, we want you to come in and work with our staff, because we want our kids to be as excited as you are with their learning. And we want our teachers to be as excited as you are about their teaching. So I so appreciate you being here. Fran also says thank you. Thank you, Fran, for joining us today.
For joining us, yes.
Very much appreciate your comments and you being with us. Anything
it's been
else
a pleasure. It has been a pleasure. And all I can say is get you someone who believes in you and who believes in change. Because once you have a partner in crime, you just need one partner. You don't need a whole group. You know, just need one partner in crime to say, I want to do things differently. And then when you have that mindset, and then you have this mindset of, I'm going to get to know my kids personally, and I'm going to focus on concepts versus vocabulary and all this other stuff, you're going to have kids learning. And when you see kids getting excited and talking in class, because we got to have dialogue, we got to definitely increase that discourse. And then you smiling, like you come to class, have your mirror. Like, I need to make sure I'm smiling, or have somebody in the class say, hey, did I was frowning today? Because that also will feed the positive classroom, that it will change the culture of the classroom, just your demeanor and coming in and high-fiving and saying, I'm happy you showed up today. Hey, let's give a high-five to each other. Everybody showed up today. Everybody on time. Yeah, let's do the little dance, whatever. Just do something where you are excited about it. You know, you're excited. We pay so much money to go see comedians. Why? Because they make us laugh. They do little things that are entertaining. Bring some entertainment to your classroom. Even if you don't feel you shine, you introvert, you got to bring just a little bit, because these kids are being entertained all the time. And if we don't find a way to engage them and entertain them just a little bit, we're going to lose them. We're really going to lose them. But it's a poorly read. I love it.
We could do another whole show about the dopamine that they get from the laughter. And what that does, you know, and even for people with ADHD, they need that dopamine. And sometimes that's, you know, why they do some of the things that they do, is because they get that rush. You know,
Shelly, around the 35 mark, you need to get your music that you like to jam to. And you need to have a 1 minute break. We're going to have welcome to the No Limit show, where we know limits, and then right at a half, we go. Everybody do it. Let's do it. That changes your energy too.
So Fran, who joined us, she and I have another podcast together. I may try that with her on our next episode.
Okay,
first,
sounds good.
Get that going before
change
my
that
next
energy.
Hashtag No Limits. But thank you again so much, everybody else. Be sure to join me next week, and make sure you like and subscribe so that you get all the notifications when all the episodes are out. Olivia, thank you so much. Enjoy your summer.
High five.
High five.
5-5 Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.